Welcome everyone that came here today. I'd like to introduce our Government Policy Task Force members and our chairman. We have Jim DeSutter, who's the chairman of the Government Policy Task Force, Jeff Link, Bo Bewley, Terry Boydson, our vice president, Knox County Farm Bureau, and Pat Seibold. So thank you to that committee for their efforts in putting this together, as well as our manager, Caitlin Schnowski. In just a few minutes, we'll get started. We have a unique opportunity this year to elect a new representative to the 74th District, and we have four candidates vying for that position. Each candidate will have 10 minutes to speak, followed by 5 minutes of follow-up questions. Upon completion of the presentations, anyone who wishes to do so will have the opportunity to meet the candidates afterwards and talk with them one-on-one. There are plenty of refreshments over here, donuts, water, coffee. Please help yourself to any of those. All the candidates drew numbers out of a hat to see who would start. We'll start with the first candidate, and we're going to ask the other three candidates to step into our boardroom so there's a little more privacy and comfortability with the candidates and anyone that would like to ask them questions. So the order that was drawn here this morning, starting off, will be Wayne Saleen, followed by Mike DeSutter, then Bill Butts, then Dan Swanson. So we'll ask that Mike and Bill and Dan exit the room, and we'd like to have first come to the podium Mr. Wayne Saleen, Republican candidate for the 74th District. So I'll turn it over to Wayne.
Okay, first I'd like to thank everyone for coming today. I'd like to thank the Knox County Farm Bureau for sponsoring this. 10 minutes is a long time, so I hope I don't take all that, because I've been to a lot of these things in the last month, as everyone else has been, and I can tell you 10 minutes is a long time. So quickly about me, I'm a third generation grain and livestock farmer from Ryle, which is just north of here. Most of you probably already know that, but I served my community for almost 30 years on the volunteer fire department. I've served Knox County by being on the county board, county finance chairman, various other committees, as well as currently the chairman of the Republican Party. I was on the pork producer board here in Knox County. I'm a member of the corn growers and the Farm Bureau here in Knox County. So that's a little bit about me. I'm running for state representative because I feel that we not only need a voice, but we need a leader down in Springfield. We've got a lot of issues down there. Number one is obviously we are in debt, hugely in debt. We need to change that around by getting rid of unfunded mandates and address that massive debt. We have unfunded liabilities, and we are leading the country and people leaving our state. We've got to change that, and to do that, we create jobs. And the way we create jobs is go about addressing the situation with our surrounding states. We need to evaluate what their regulations are and make sure we're competitive. Right now, we're over-regulated compared to our neighbors, so all these businesses are leaving us, especially like the 74th, because Iowa is not very far away. So it's easy for them to jump across the river and still do business here in our district. So we need to reevaluate all of those regulations and make sure we're competitive, because right now we are not. We need to address our workman's comp laws. From a business aspect, we have the worst workman comp laws in the country, not just in the Midwest, in the whole country. We need to change those things so we can become competitive. I know that's going to be difficult because Chicago doesn't want to allow those things to happen, but it has to happen. We need to sit down with the Democrats and let them know, you've been running our state and look where it's gotten us. It's time for us to make changes, and you have to come on board with us and work. And I think some of those Democrats are hearing the same message from their regions. That's what I get the feedback from them when I go and talk to some of them, is the people in their districts are fed up because they've been promised things and they're not getting it either. So maybe we're going to be able to get it through this deadlock. It's not going to happen until after probably November, because Mike Madigan still has control of them. He's the one with the money. He's the one getting them reelected. But the only way to do it is to sit down and talk to them and make them understand. And I feel that there's a lot of movement in our state to want to make those changes. And we may pick up a few Republican seats in the House of Representatives this year, or the state legislator, because there are so many people fed up. We have some good candidates running in other districts that have been democratically controlled. And if we pick up three or four of those, we can get rid of the supermajority. That will make them focus more on negotiating and less on just forcing things down our throat. We need to get Mike Madigan to understand that and allow things to come to the floor for votes. That's why we don't have a budget. The governor has proposed changes, and Mike Madigan won't even hear it. He won't allow a vote to come to the floor. He's just completely shut it down, and nothing's going to happen because he's in control. That gets back to what Nick's saying. We need to have term limits. If we had term limits, Mike Madigan wouldn't be driving the bus down there, and we'd be getting things accomplished. I will self-impose three terms. I think it's important that we have term limits. We've had very We've had quite a few really good representatives who've been there a long time, and term limits wouldn't have affected their ability to continue working. Representative Don Moffitt was one of those. He did a fantastic job for the 24 years he was there. But we have many, many that are like Mike Madigan, and they're down there working for special interests and big dollars, and they're not working for the people. We've got to change that. Term limits will eliminate that. Independent map process, that will change that a little bit too, because it will allow districts to become more competitive. We'll be able to get new people interested in running, and hopefully it will take away some of the ability for the big dollar people to continue to control their districts. There's a lot of changes we need to do. Unfunded mandates, that's something we need to get rid of. I would like to call them unfunded suggestions instead of mandates. Springfield passes these laws, shoves them onto the local units of government, and tells them, we're not going to give you any money, but you have to enforce this law. And it's really affecting the local counties, the school districts, even the townships. These things have to go away. If they want to make a suggestion and allow the local governments to decide whether they want it and they can afford it, that's fine. But to just shove it down the throat of the local local areas that know they can't afford it, that's wrong, and we need to get away from that. That's why we're struggling so much out here in the rural area, because we just don't have the revenue source that some of the bigger areas do. We need to get rid of that. We have property taxes that are lower in the rural area than they are in the suburban areas around Chicago. Those school districts up there are flush with cash. They don't need state funding, but they're still getting it. And because of that, they don't care about these unfunded mandates. But the school districts out here in the rural area, it is a huge problem from them. We are going to have to make cuts. Springfield's going to have to make cuts. The school districts are going to have to make cuts. And the local governments are going to have to make cuts. But the more we can get money moved around and put it where it needs to be, the less cuts, the less painful it's going to be. We're going to have to evaluate all of our state agencies. We have waste in Springfield, and that's a given. So we go in and we evaluate all these various agencies, and we can find wasteful spending and make those cuts. And even if it's 1% or 2%, that'll be a huge amount of money going back in to our revenue source so we can start paying our bills. We're going to have to also evaluate all of our individual bodies of government. We have such amount of huge of redundancy in Springfield and other places, we can eliminate a lot of agencies, and that'll save us money as well. But then that money must be dedicated toward paying our bills, not creating new programs. That's what happened when we had that 66% tax increase. That money was supposed to go toward paying our bills. It didn't. New agencies, new programs were started, and that money went down the drain. And that's why there's such a huge disconnect and distrust from taxpayers and legislators. And that's got to change. We have to earn that trust back, and the way to do that is to be honest with them and say, we're going to take this money and we're actually going to use it for what we say we're going to use. And that hasn't been going on in the state of Illinois or anywhere else as far as that goes for quite some time. That's got to change. We've got to get back to being straight with the people, the taxpayers, because that's who we're working for. We're not working for ourselves, and we are not working for big interest, special interest groups. We've got to start working for the people. I could keep talking, but basically at some point in time, you've said enough, and I suppose it's time for me to open up for questions.
Okay, I'm going to repeat the question since we are on a live broadcast. Terry Boyson asked, what specifically would you do to try to get the governor and the legislature back on track in discussing the budget?
Well, currently the governor has proposed a couple compromises. He wants to sit down with Mike Madigan and make some changes. So specifically what's going to have to happen is the other Democrats, you're going to have to work with those. I will have to work with those guys, and they'll have to put the pressure on Mike Madigan, because Mike Madigan does not want to make any changes. He's afraid of change, because if it actually works, it'll show that he was wrong and he'll lose his control. So he's afraid of change, and he's not going to allow it to happen. So we have to work with the other Democrats who are hearing feedback from their districts that things aren't working. They'll have to go pressure him to allow a vote to come to the floor.
Wayne had mentioned eliminating agencies, and the question was, what particular agencies would you target?
At this point in time, I haven't had the time to research all of those, the same as I haven't had the time to evaluate the various agencies where we will cut wasteful spending. That's going to be something that's going to happen after the primary, given time to sit down and work on that. This has kind of been a rush for the last 2 months, and I think the other candidates will tell you the same thing. We've been really busy going everywhere and doing all sorts of things. It's just a general concept, and then when we get through this, it'll be time to sit down and specifically target individual areas, because right now I cannot tell you one or two right off the top of my head, because I don't want to rush into something and cut something that later on is going to hurt us. It has to be evaluated properly to make sure it's going to be something that's effective but still maintains the programs we need to maintain.
Any more questions? If not, I've got a question. You talked a lot about state budget, and we're all aware that the state budget issue is number one priority facing Illinois right now. What's another issue that you feel you could be a champion of, kind of excluding the budget battle that we're obviously all into right now? What's an issue that you feel you can champion that to make a quicker effect and maybe affect a quick change once you get to Springfield?
That's a really difficult question because obviously we're so far in debt, a quick change is going to be hard to do. As everyone in here knows, being a farmer, it's easier to get into debt than it is to get out of debt. So therefore, it's going to take a long time. And quick change, if people are expecting that, it's not going to happen. But we can make some changes, like changing our regulations so we can start attracting businesses back in here. And that will be a quick change if we can do that, but it will show little improvement for a long time. And, you know, it's a quick change is making everything different than what it is, but to see immediate overnight success will not happen. What I'd like to do is make sure that we get our motor fuel tax money put in the motor fuel tax and not taken out because, you know, this is an agricultural district and our roads and bridges are deteriorating and our motor fuel tax has been being swept and used in other areas, so therefore we're not getting projects done. We need to get a capital fund bill passed so that we have money in there so we can affect projects. We need to get our roads up. We need to be able to move our product, and we're starting to crumble really bad around here. So those are things that can happen that we can get done soon, but they're not going to have an immediate impact because everything takes a long time.
The question was, many of us here are farmers. What are your plans to be an advocate for agriculture?
Well, that goes back to my regulatory things. We need the EPA is in constantly causing us problems. We are the best stewards of the land. We do not need people from Chicago coming down here telling us what we need to do to our land. If we don't want to take care of our land, you're not going to be profitable. So why do we need a bunch of people from Chicago telling us how to conserve our precious topsoil and other things like that? But we are so overregulated even in agriculture, and that's what I would like to do is get rid of those regulations. How many of you have to go to meetings every year to get a license so you can go out and even spray your own crop? I mean, those are simple things, and those are just put in place simply to generate revenue for the state. It isn't because they're trying to make things better. They just are trying to find a way to generate revenue. I mean, it's a good concept that we know what we're doing. But we can do that on our own. There's internet access. People are not out there overspraying because they want to. That just costs money. Whenever they regulate you, it is a problem. It costs you money that way as well, and it generates revenue for the state. So therefore, that's what I'd like to do is, like I said, evaluate the regulations, make sure we're competitive with neighboring states. But we, you know, as agriculture, we can't just get up and move like other businesses do. We're stuck here. So we have to start forcing them to work with us instead of them forcing us to work with them. And so we need to be a more informed and louder voice in Springfield, and that's the only way we're going to get that done. But we have to work with the Democrats who are forcing these problems toward us instead of just sitting there and accepting it. You know, the media has allowed that to happen. If we as Republicans try to address our situations, we get labeled as all sorts of mean things. But we need to stand up for ourselves, and it's time for that to start happening. And the sooner we stand up as Republicans and the sooner we stand up as farmers, we can start getting better outcome from the Springfield.
Thank you. Again, a Republican candidate for the 74th District. We'll have Wayne step out of the room, and next we'll have Mike DeSutter.
I'm sure they'll say the same thing, but I'm going to say I would appreciate your support on March 15th. Thank you.
Okay, well now welcome to the podium, Mike DeSutter, a Republican candidate for 74th District.
Thank you, Grant. As a Republican, I'd like to see one thing right off the bat that most of you are sitting to my right. I know Mr. Butts is here, but I'd like to thank the Knox County Farm Bureau for having us in today and listening to us and trying to figure out who's the best candidate for the 74th District. This is the first time in nearly a quarter century that we've had a real choice in the primary. So hopefully today I can kind of convince you a little bit on why I'm the best choice for the 74th District. First off, I'm a business person. I know how to budget, plan, and adjust, and work with my partners to get the job done and be successful in business. Two, I think I have a pretty good grasp of what this state needs and how we need to move forward to fix the problems and turn this state around. Three, I'm for term limits. I think not only term limits on the legislative level, but also on the leadership levels on the state. I think some of our problems is because we've had certain people there too long, and they've consolidated too much power under what they call the governor and four tops, I'd like to see all the legislature involved in making decisions instead of just a handful. Like I said, my name is Mike DeSutter. I farm with two brothers, Randy and Jim, and each one of them have a son back up around Woodhull. My wife, Melanie, and I, we have three kids. Proud of them. Oldest is Charlene. She's married to Luke Sullivan. They live on the west side of Galesburg. Our middle one's John. He's a freshman out of Iowa State, studying engineering. And our third one is will turn 16 tomorrow, and she's a sophomore up at Rock Island Almond. But I'm also very involved in some of the things I'm involved in. I'm heavily involved in our church. I'm trustee up at St. John's Catholic Church in Woodhull, president of West Central FS, and also I sit on the OSF area-wide board here in Galesburg. Some of the things I've done in the past, been very involved in, of course, FS for the last 12 to 15 years. Before that, I was very involved in Farm Bureau. As a young farmer, I was got second in the state discussion meet, and 20 years ago, I won the state and national Outstanding Young Farmer Achievement Award, and I've been involved in everything else from JCs to Illinois Ag Leadership Program, Leadership Greater Galesburg. When we had livestock, I was on the Pork Producers Board here in Knox County for a while, so I've been involved in a lot of commodity organizations. But I understand that agriculture and agriculture industry is the number one businesses here in the 74th District. I've been in agriculture all my life. I understand that. But some of the things that we need to talk about, budget. It's a huge issue. It should have been passed 8 months ago. You know, people ask me, what's the first thing you're going to do when you get to Springfield? And I go, well, hopefully there's going to be a lot of things done before I'd get there. Like they need to pass two budgets, and they need to move on that. So it's hurting everybody by not passing a budget. We're spending over $50 million a year on interest alone from back payments. That $50 million could go a long ways in funding education or other programs that are vital to not only this district, but to the state. Pensions, probably the number one or two issues, depends on how you want to look at it. But one out of every $4 that's generated in the state goes to pensions, and we're not doing anything about it. I think we need to, the retirees, we need to try and honor what we have promised them, but to the new employees or current employees, we need to roll over or give them an option to go to a 401k type plan and get them out of the pension plan if they so choose. We got to start somewhere, but pensions is just eating the state budget alive, one out of every $4. We can't sustain that. And with that 4 years of increased income tax rate, we did nothing to lower the pension or our deficit, our budget deficit. That budget, that increased income tax, did nothing for us. That's not the answer. The answer is we got to change the business climate here in the 74th District in the state of Illinois. Last year, we lost, on average, 56 jobs a day transferred out of the state of Illinois. We got to stop the exodus out of the state. We got to become more business friendly. That means we need to rework workman's comp or tort reform. And the political climate's got to change. We got to become more business friendly in this state. We're losing way too much to the neighboring states. We have two or three friends that have unfortunately moved to Texas to take jobs. And people are saying it's because of the climate. The young people are saying it's because of the climate. And also, when you talk about education, we're actually exporting more kids out for higher education than what we're teaching here in Illinois. We need to keep our kids here in Illinois, give them a good education, and provide jobs for them. Jobs would solve everything. If we can get jobs here, we can keep our young people here, we'll have more kids in school here, they'll get jobs, they'll pay taxes, it's a domino effect. And right now we're going backwards. But if we can get, you know, if you look at some of the school issue problems, it's because we don't have the jobs here, we don't have the kids here. Galesburg back in the 70s and 80s were graduating classes of 700 to 800. Now they're graduating classes of 300. And that's what's creating the issues like Carl Sandburg College. They don't have the numbers either to offer the programs that they used to or would like to offer, because we don't have the kids and the jobs here. So I know I keep harping on jobs, but I really think that that's one of the keys to have a better climate here to turn things around. Term limits, I'm in favor of term limits. I'm not a politician. This is the first time I've dealt into politics. And the reason I've got in is because I farm here. I've lived here for generations. I'd like to see my kids come back here and live. I love the state of Illinois, but we need to get this state turned around and fixed. And I'm willing to go to Springfield and make the tough decisions and let the chips fall where they may. I'm not worried about being reelected. I'm worried about going down there and doing the right thing and making the tough decisions. And I think you'll find in my past, in some of my leadership roles, I don't always do what's popular, but I do what I think's right, and I stand behind that, and I'll continue to do that if you send me to Springfield. And so I'll stop there. I don't know what my time is, but I'll just tell you one thing. I don't have all the answers. I don't think anybody does, but I'll make you one promise. I'll work as hard as anybody to represent the 74th District and get this state turned around, and I'd appreciate your vote on March 15th. Is there any questions?
Again, since we're on the air, the question was, what would you do specifically to get the governor and the speaker to get on better terms and start talking about budget issues?
Well, I think the governor has put out a couple olive branches there to try and get some things moving. And at one point, the Senate president talked like he may have a deal worked out on pensions, but that's kind of since fell on deaf ears. The speaker is just not willing to move on issues. It seems like collective bargaining is the one issue that I've heard time and time again that the Democrats just will not discuss. But we need to find some common ground on items they can discuss. It appears that pensions may be one of them. Two, that they need to get a budget passed. And I don't understand why they're not working 5, 6, 7 days a week and hashing it out and getting it figured out, because we're all suffering because of it. And we hire legislators to do their job. And you can pass a budget if you want. It's constitutionally, you will pass a budget that's in balance. And I think we need to decide in this state difference between wants and needs. You know, we're at the point where we can't do everything that we want. We got to decide out what we need. And every legislator has some pet projects that are probably more wants than needs, and we need to cut those out.
The question was, you mentioned jobs would solve a lot of problems. What types of jobs are you considering, and what would you do to get them here?
A lot of manufacturing jobs have moved out, agricultural jobs, trucking companies. We've got a lot of educators that are moving out because they don't believe that they'll have a pension when they get there. A lot of the younger ones, I was talking to Lori Sundberg last week from Carl Sandburg. She said, you know, a lot of their good young faculty members or administration are leaving the state because they don't believe that the pension is going to be there when the younger ones retire. We get this business climate changed around so businesses will come to Illinois instead of leaving Illinois. You know, we can look at, and we sit close enough to Iowa here that we see a lot of people or businesses move right across the river. You know, we need to be have better business climate than what our neighbors do, and they'll move back in. I believe that Illinois has the best infrastructure of any state around. We have the best. We got waterways. We have interstates. We have all 6 major railroads come through this state. We have the best agricultural land in the world. We got airports. Illinois should be humming. We have the infrastructure right here in Illinois that should be the envy of the United States. We just got to get this turned around and be bringing people back instead of letting them leave.
More questions? I've got a question, Mike. we all know the budget and the pension issues we're dealing with in Springfield, but what's another issue that you've maybe already identified in the 74th District? This is an issue that I feel I can take to the legislature and get them to talk about and maybe have a chance of getting something passed that maybe doesn't affect necessarily the budget or the pension issues.
Well, I think education's a large one. You know, the high schools, Galesburg High School, I believe, said they got only funded 87% of what they were promised last year. Now, if you're getting a paycheck and you're planning on, your budget says you're going to make X amount of dollars, but at the end of the year, your employer says, well, instead of giving you X amount, I'm only going to give you 87% of that. Well, that kind of screws up your budget, doesn't it? You may not have went on that weekend vacation, or you may not have had Christmas for your kids or whatever it is. So the state's got to be honest with their funding, especially on the educational level. We need to, if we're going to fund them at 87%, tell them we're going to fund you at 87% going in. And the MAP grants, I know Carl Sandburg, most of the colleges in the fall, the state didn't come through with the MAP grants. The colleges ate that up to try and keep the kids there. I know Carl Sandburg this spring did not offer that program to the college kids. So now the college kids and or their parents are paying that bill instead of what they were expecting from the state through the MAP grants. Just another reason we need to fund education. It's vitally important that we educate our kids and for the programs that we need. We need all sorts of people. You know, I know in the 74th District, we need everything from salesmen to equipment operators, farm equipment operators, to electricians, nursing programs, big here in the Galesburg area. So there's a wide variety of jobs that can be gained if we turn things around.
The question is, many of us here are farmers. What would your plans be to advocate for agriculture?
I think I'm very well suited in that area. I've been involved in agriculture all my life and agriculture organizations, whether or not it's through a Farm Bureau. We still not only farm up here, but my wife Melanie's from down around DuCoin, Franklin, Jefferson, Perry County area, and we still operate a farm down there. And we have a vast web of people we know across the state, whether it's the, you know, Corn Growers Association Executive Director, I know him by name, or the Soybean Association Director was my wife's sister's brother, so we know him quite well. We know a lot of people in Farm Bureau. I think I'd be an advocate. Last week, West Central FS was on a long-range planning tour down in New Orleans, and we spent some time out on the Mississippi River looking at the shipping on the Mississippi, imports, exports, and all the commodities coming up and down the river. I think that's vitally important. I think that's one of my strong suits, is that I understand agriculture. I think I have the connections around the state, and I'll be a real advocate for ag in Illinois.
Okay, any more questions for Mike? If not, thank you, Mike. Again, Mike DeSutter, candidate for 74th District. Appreciate your time, Mike. Well, now let Mike step out of the room, and we'll wait on Mr. Bill Butts. So I'd now like to welcome Bill Butts, Democratic candidate for the 74th District, to the podium.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak today, and thank you for having me. Just want to go over a few things and start off by saying that I read The Economist magazine very frequently. My background's in economics, and I was absolutely startled when one of their, this is like a British publication, but I was absolutely startled by something that I saw in there, and that was the fact that they had Puerto Rico and Illinois in the same sentence. And they were talking about different problems. But I'm not really here to talk about the problems. I think we already know what they are, and we've all debated it up and down and around. But let's talk about maybe what we can do to have some solutions. You know, there is a political scientist and former state representative, James Nolan, who wrote a book called Fixing Illinois, which I've read. And one of the main things that he talked about as far as fixing the system was the redistricting. And basically, I don't think I need to tell you how ridiculous our current system of drawing legislative maps is. As a matter of fact, it is so stacked in favor of the incumbent that last time that individuals ran for this position, throughout the state of Illinois, 56% of those races were unopposed. And I looked at this and I said, where has our representative democracy gone? What has happened here? And when you don't have competition in the electoral process, you don't have that exchange of ideas, which is so critical to our formation of policy. And I think for a long time, when we do have incumbents that are in office for a long period of time, you get a different sort of mentality. You don't really zero in on the critical issues. You don't really zero in on things that are really need to be solved. You basically can kind of just run around because, and not really strike anything on the head, because your reelection is pretty much insured. And that's what we've had for a long time in Illinois politics. Now, how do we remedy this situation? Well, as Nolan says, what we do is, first of all, we start drawing maps by GPS. We do them with the newest technology. And when I was chairman of the Galesburg Election Commission, that's exactly what we did. When we drew our maps, we drew them, first of all, based upon the data that we had. And we did not base it upon the data of the political ramifications. When we brought it to the city council, they certainly had their ideas as far as what they wanted to do. But we tried as closely as possible to follow the objective information and data so that we would come out with as fair a map as possible. And this is something that we definitely need to do in Illinois. And we can do it, and other states have done it. Iowa is one state we're redistricting. We just need to go across our state line to the west. They've got it. Arizona just had it pass muster by the U.S. Supreme Court. They have it. California has it. Florida now has it. So it's something that we need to work for and do. We cannot continue this sort of representative government, which is not representative. You know, I've been through Lee County and some of the areas, Bureau County, and there's wonderful people over there. But their interests are different than ours. And when we artificially create a legislative map over that, we forget communities of interest. For example, Galesburg. Look at Galesburg. It's divided in half. Look at Knox County. It's divided in half. Look at Bureau County. Look at Lee County. The only solid that's in there is Henry and Mercer. So, you know, is this the kind of government that we want? Is this the kind of representative democracy that we deserve? I don't think so. And this is something that we need to address. The second thing I'd like to talk about a little bit today is agriculture. And what my view is, as being kind of a student of economics, that we might be able to do, not only in the state but in the nation, to help the small farmer, the small family farmer. You know, most small family farmers are income modest but property rich, which means that they pay, the small farmer pays an inordinate amount of taxes on property, when if the income was taken into account, the farmer would actually, I believe, do a lot better. And if you look at some things, if your costs of production are actually lower, it's going to stimulate demand in the local economy, particularly in the agricultural economy, where it will increase demands for implements and farm equipment and tools. And so if a person's costs of production are less, I believe this will go a long ways toward helping stimulate agriculture locally. And, you know, I lose a little patience, and I guess it's because of the way I've been trained, I've been trained to think as an economist, but I lose a lot of patience with people that talk about budget cuts for the sake of budget cuts. And what I'm trying to say here is this. We need to look at what areas of budget cuts are going to impact what areas of the economy. And we need to try to be more sensitive. For example, if we cut infrastructure. Now, I don't think I need to tell you how bad our infrastructure is, but But we need to do something about the locks and dams that make it easier for agriculture to move the products. That needs to be taken a look at. But I lose patience with budget cuts for the sake of budget cuts. If we cut the wrong things, we hurt the economy. If we cut the right things, we may be able to help the economy. So, you know, there's more than just cutting budgets. We have to do a balancing act to see what areas of the economy that's going to help and what areas of the economy it's going to hurt. And then I think we can make more rational decisions as far as the cutting of budgets. And I really think that that's something we need to take a look at. We need to look at the long-range impact of what we're doing and its impact on the economy. And that's all sectors. Agriculture, business, all sectors of the economy are affected by this. And I have to tell you, something you know very well is, especially in this day of age when we've got a situation, and this is, we're in a situation now where if we deny global warming, I think you know yourselves that something isn't right here. But who's the best conservationist? Who's the best environmentalist? Who's the best ecologist? Well, it's a small family farmer. Because you drink the water, you breathe the air, and you eat the food that you produce. So you've got to be on your toes to make sure that all of this is handled properly. Because you're the one that stands to lose, and you're the one that's in danger if there's problems with your products and with the water and everything else. So we need to get back to the small family farmer if we're going to save this way of life. Because once you get that divorce from ownership and control in a company, a large company, things like the environment don't matter as much as profits. And I think that is something that needs to be seriously looked at. I'm not anti-business by any stretch of the imagination. I'm an economist. But we have to look at some of our policies, and we have to look at the realities of the world right now. And we have to come up with some solutions rather than just continuing to argue between each other. The other thing I'd like to talk about is education. You know, when I ran for this position about 22 years ago, I lost in the primary by 11 votes. But I said then and I'll say now, we are never going to move toward an equalization of per pupil expenditures in this state unless we move to the income tax. And there's a lot of things we can do with the income tax. But if we got to get away from the property tax, which I think hurts farmers, and into the income tax, which can actually help them. So I think this needs to be looked at, and particularly when it comes to education. When you have some school districts in the Chicago area, the collar suburbs, that are running between $25,000 to $30,000 per pupil, and other students in rural and downstate areas, which are lucky to get $4,000 or $5,000 per person, per student. And as a matter of fact, I think in 205, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's about $7,000 per student, far below what is going on in the larger, more affluent areas. So I think that needs to be looked at too. And finally, I leave you with this. We need to take new approaches to new problems. I believe I can be of great assistance in this because I understand economics. I understand the bottom line as far as trying to stimulate the economy, but at the same time exercising frugality. These things have to be balanced. And you know, in our society, all interests need to be balanced by different groups, different organizations. I remember reading a book by Alexis de Tocqueville called Democracy in America. Maybe some of you are familiar with this. But what he said that the strength in our country is the fact that we have these different associations, that we have this situation, that we have groups that represent farm, labor, business, each competing, their own self-interest, but at the same time getting a balance between that. And right now, I think there's an imbalance between the different sectors, and it's being reflected in our policies, and it's being reflected in our views. And I think we need to get back to the point where we have to be sensitive to other people's needs, to other sectors' needs, and try to balance all this in the best way possible so that we can make significant differences in policy and do so in a rational, forward-looking manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. We'll now open it up for any questions. Again, the question is, what would you do specifically to get the governor and the speaker talking on the budget?
We need to sit down and basically force all of them in a room and say, what do we agree on, first of all? That's what we need to do. What do we agree on? So let's solve what we agree on. And then what we don't disagree on, let's see if we can't resolve it in that fashion. But to put the budget as a hostage, basically, while we're trying to hammer out ideological differences, it's not good. It doesn't work. We have too many competing interests in society to be able to do that. It'd be nice, you know, in a democracy, if we didn't have to deal with all this. You know, there's a lot of efficiency in Germany, but we don't want to go there either. So what we need to do, first of all, is to get everybody, you know, together and say, look, what do we agree on here? Where can we breach common ground? I think that's what needs to be done. And, you know, a lot of people, they criticize politicians, and rightfully so. But, you know, a good politician sometimes is what's needed to break deadlocks and gridlock. Someone that can work on both sides of the aisle and see beyond, you know, their own interest to understand how important this issue is to them. So if we can somehow, I think, reach a consensus first on the issues that unite us rather than the issues that divide us, I think the rest of it will, and this also generates a certain trust, too. If you realize that you're able to come to an agreement with somebody on some other issues, then maybe you can trust that person to say, but okay, let's look at this one. Where can we compromise here? Where can we make this work?
Hey, I've got a question. We all obviously know all the budget and pension issues that are facing our state. Those are definitely the elephants in the room. Now, what's another issue that you've maybe identified coming out of the 74th District that when you would get to Springfield, I've identified this issue. This is something I think I can develop legislation on and get something passed that may doesn't have to do with the budget and the pension issues.
Well, first of all, we need to, as I indicated before, we need to look at the economy and the local impact of our cuts and of our spending. One of the things that I'd like to see done, particularly for agriculture, is to upgrade our locks and dams. That's a major problem, and it's only going to get worse unless we start putting money into that. The other thing is we need to, in this district in particular, I believe that we need to do more as far as rail transportation through the district, particularly in Princeton. I think that we can upgrade certain, and maybe we could make a couple of other stops along the way too to assist individuals in this district. You know, they've stopped going to some of the smaller towns because they don't think the markets is there. But I believe that if we can more adequately link the area with rail transportation, that this is important. They say that some of the ridership is down, but that's only because the cost of oil and gasoline is dropped. When that comes back up, which it will, then we're going to run into a situation where transportation is going to be ever more important. And the transportation I'm talking about isn't just passenger, it's actual freight too, and a lot of that is agricultural production. So we need to make sure that our infrastructure is adequately funded, financed, and that's our railroads, our water, and to a certain degree we have to make sure that our airports receive adequate funding as well, and that's important. That's our infrastructure, and I think that's where we've got to take the closest look at, as far as making sure that we don't do anything through our budget cuts to hurt that. I think I already stated I had a pretty tough question at another Farm Bureau meeting that I went to. And they said, how can you talk Michael Madigan, and why would you support agriculture when the Democratic leadership, Mr. Madigan, is talking about a tax on farm equipment? And I said, you know what? I said, Michael Madigan does not represent a rural district. I do. I mean, when you look at the composition of the 74th district, it's very agricultural. So, you know, it would be foolish for me to completely ignore agriculture and not try to promote agriculture, because that's our bread and butter around here. And, you know, as I was asked a question the other day, well, you know, how can you, as an attorney, you know, understand the, you know, the plights of the farmer? I said, well, you know what? I educate myself. I read. And that's all I've ever done in my life is read, basically. So, you know, you have to keep an open mind. None of us that are running here, I think you can probably tell already, none of us are stupid. You know, I think we're all intelligent. The idea is, will we keep an open mind? And my heart is there because, you know, I have very fond memories as a child with my grandfather. He farmed up by Ryle. And my uncle was a family farmer. I mean, and they were small. But this is something that's important, and I think it has even added urgency now because of the environmental consequences. And I think small farmers are the best stewards of our environment. And given the chance, I think that it'll straighten itself out. But we've got to be a little patient, and at the same time, we've got to understand that the solution to the environment is not through big business.
The question is, what is your position on term limits?
Well, my position on that has been pretty clear from the beginning, and that is, you know, I think that we're going to basically solve one problem by redistricting. If we have competitive districts, I dare say that I don't think anybody is going to be able to stay in office for 24, 25 years. Am I basically for it? Yes, but I think we can naturally accomplish the same thing. And the problem with term limits is it runs into a constitutional problem. It basically infringes on the right of an individual to run for office, and that's the way the courts have basically ruled on it. Where redistricting now has been pretty much, at least by the ruling of the Chicago court last year, basically says that that's on the table, that that's something that's fair game. Term limits, I think, is going to be a whole different set of problems. But I do agree with you. Let's look at redistricting first, and if that's not working, let's look at term limits. I don't like the idea of somebody sitting in a state house 44 years. There's something wrong with that. The founder of my party, Thomas Jefferson, he believed that we should have a citizen legislature, that we should only, that a citizen should, first of all, be a citizen, and second of all, be a legislator, which means basically that you serve your time, and then you let somebody else do it. And the other thing was, as far as Aristotle is concerned, this goes back a long, long ways. Even the ancient Greeks looked upon running for office as a citizen duty, something that you took your turn, something that you did for the benefit of the community at large, and then you turn it over to somebody else. So what we've done, unfortunately, is to create a whole new set of professional politicians, and it's seen through our districts that their main concern is making sure that they get reelected. So my answer is, let's take a look first at redistricting. Let's get that straightened out, and then we'll see whether or not we need term limits or not. It may very well be that we may not have to deal with that, grapple with that constitutional issue. But am I in favor for it in theory? Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's all the time we have. Again, thank you to Bill Butts, and we've got one more candidate to get to, so let's give him a round of applause. Okay, and I'd like to reintroduce our final candidate for today, Republican candidate for 74th District, Mr. Daniel Swanson.
Candidate, because I was thinking kind of the last victim of the day, the way we're going here. Well, thank you for coming out this morning for this important time in our political process. Any birthdays today to recognize? Today's February 29th. No special birthdays? Okay. Well, I just kind of wanted to recognize those who had a special birthday today. Any veterans here today? Well, thank you for your service. And I've got Mom and Dad here with me today. Dad still is part of the family farm. He operated the combine, and he did some fall plowing this fall, and he's got three simple rules for you farmers out there. First rule is he doesn't do windows. That's what the kids are for. He has a cell phone, so if he breaks down, he doesn't do maintenance. That's what us boys are for. And when he has to turn the lights on the combine, that's when he gets out. So three simple rules for Dad. And Mom is the head baker in our house, always some fresh cookies at our 9 o'clock or 9:30 break. First, I want to recognize State Representative Don Moffitt. He's not here today, but certainly want to recognize all he's done for all of us here in our communities, in the district, the state, in our country. He and his family have sacrificed a lot over his 24 years in his service to our state, so I think we need to recognize him. When I made the decision to run for office, it wasn't an easy one. It wasn't one I made on my own. As I said, we're a family operation, fifth-generation Swanson Farms, and me being one of those individuals in our farming operation, I thought it was important that I got the family blessing along with the Lord's blessing, so we certainly counseled the Lord for this run for office. And I'm not looking for a second career, third career, whatever you want to say. I had 27 and a half years in the Army. I enlisted right out of high school I graduated from high school in May 1977 and enlisted in August of 77. I completed 23 years of service, left the Army in January 2001 and watched a lot of my friends go to war. I volunteered as a retiree recall, went back in the military as lieutenant colonel once again, and served a year in Iraq from July 07 to July 08 in Baghdad, Iraq, in the what we refer to as the impact zone, but the maps called it the international zone. It was an interesting year there. I know First Sergeant Hall has spent some time overseas, and he can relate to those experiences. I retired again in July 2008 and was once again called up to military service in April 2010, where I spent 3 years at the Rock Island Arsenal, transferring a mission from the Pentagon to the Rock Island Arsenal, saving about 87 jobs, part of a team there that we saved 87 jobs, and millions of dollars in taxpayers' money transferring that mission to the Rock Island Arsenal, reducing manpower with that transfer, but also we developed an automation system to do the work that was previously done through spreadsheet and pencils. So as I said, I'm not looking for a second career. I've had my first career. I was also 17 years on the Alwood Board of Education, reelected several times to that position. And in that position, I learned quite a bit about what mandates cause and regulations cause to our school districts. Currently, there are 135 mandates imposed on our districts, costing around $300 million each year for our school districts and costing you and I in our tax in our property tax dollars going to our schools. And every time we had a new mandate or new curriculum change, we would have to teach teachers how to teach that subject, have in-service days, buy new textbooks, and it would just cost us money. So not too much in favor of continuing with the practice of our current legislators in sending us all these different mandates. I also support term limits. I believe it's important to go down to Springfield or go to Springfield as your public servant representing you. And when I come home from Springfield, I hope to be able to do these types of meetings regularly with farm bureaus, with our city councils, with our senior centers, keeping track and keeping informed of what's going on at the grassroots level. And when I retire, I'll come back in to do my service back on the farm and be that public servant, just as I believe our forefathers intended in the Constitution. I support the independent map amendment. I believe that's important. I support our right to bear arms. That's a constitutional right given to each one of us, and I support that right. I support the rights of the unborn child. I support our rights to free speech. I support public education and the rights of parents to choose teaching their children at home. I respect and admire those who served or are serving in the military, police force, fire departments, medical professions, and first responders. As I said, I support reducing mandates and regulations to our schools, services, local governments, and small businesses, farmers. I support paying bills on time by our Illinois government. Currently, when we pay a bill that's late, we pay a 12% surcharge. So we're racking up millions of dollars just in surcharges a year as we go forward today. I will support and provide a strong voice for our National Guard men and women. Here in the 74th District, we have three National Guard armories, Kewaunee, Galva, and Galesburg. In those three armies, we have five National Guard units represented. Those National Guard facilities bring millions of dollars, yes, millions of dollars in our community in salary, payroll of the soldiers, in maintenance of the facilities, the full-time force that's in those facilities, and some of the new technology being entered into those facilities now is bringing great revenue into our communities. And oh, by the way, I've seen terrorism, I've seen evil, I've been to Iraq, and we don't want that here. But the situation is real. It's not if, it's when it happens. And when it does happen, we're going to need a strong National Guard force to be able to protect us and provide our security and services. And I will continue to carry on Representative Moffitt's legacy. So why am I running? Well, that just kind of highlights who I am. Now let me explain why I'm running. As a fifth-generation farmer, we too, just as you, have had to face a lot of the different regulations. And it's no longer farming as you'd like, it's farming as you're told. And it's not necessarily the way I like to see the way business is done for each and every one of us. In 2013, September 2013, we opened up two new hog facilities. My son Matt runs one of the facilities, it's 2,480 pig unit. My nephew Josh runs the other facility of 2,480 pig units. In those units are about 1,200 gallons of pig waste or pig poo. And I can go in that facility and I wash my boots over the drain, but if I wash my hands over that same drain, it becomes human waste. So we had to install a $43,500 septic system because we could not mix the washing the hand human waste in with that 12 million gallons of pig poo. You know, something that just, to me, being a soldier who had gray water, who dealt with living in the field, dealt with those environments often, it's hard for me to understand and accept why those regulations are imposed. I'm also running for our veterans. I'm the superintendent for the Henry County Veterans Assistance Commission in Cambridge, Illinois. I had a World War II or Korean War veteran come into my office with two Purple Hearts, bayonet wounds to his belly, and needed financial assistance to pay medical bills. And I asked him, I said, aren't you carried, you're a combat veteran, you don't have VA medical care? He said, no, didn't know I was eligible. So within 30 minutes, one signature, one phone call, and one fax, I had him enrolled in the VA healthcare program. It's that simple. Think about when the World War II veteran came home, he went to the farm. Korean War veteran came home, got off the train, and went right to the factories. Vietnam War veteran came home, he went right into the civilian world because he didn't want to be identified as a soldier because of the way we treated him. Very sad. Each time I left the military in 2001, 2008, and 2013, I had to go through a week's training to learn how to be a civilian again, how to do job resumes, what my VA benefits were, and all those special things that those heroes didn't get the opportunity to learn on. Quality of education for our children, K-12. You know, I believe in public schools, but I believe it's also a parent's right to choose how they want to their children to learn. I don't like Common Core. I didn't like No Child Left Behind. I think those are too many regulations. So we're not only concerned about state regulations, but as your state representative, I will work with our federal legislators, Congressman Bustos, Congressman LaHood, to ensure those federal regulations like Common Core don't create the hardships on us as we currently face today. I also believe we need to provide services to the developmentally disabled, such as the Abilities Plus. We need to continue to fund those programs because they too deserve the support and our need to keep moving forward. I talked about the strong National Guard presence in our communities. I've talked about reduced regulations, no tax increases. I don't believe we need tax increases. And who has a CDL or who has a license to drive a semi here? Boy, isn't that confusing. You know, it's just a big circle of things that continue to be regulated upon us. You know, you just don't get a license. You have to know which box to check to ensure you're covered when driving that semi. So, you know, and you need what the documentation to prove that you're an Illinois citizen with that passport. Wow, really? You know, so there's silly stuff out there that we need to fix. And it's not going to cost us anything to make those changes, and that's what I'm all for. You know, I talked about the veterans. There are, I believe, 82 or 92 different Illinois agencies, but only one's concerned about the veteran, and that's the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. So, and protect the unborn. I think it's important that we have a voice for that, the little one. I think, what is it, within 21 days that once the baby's conceived, we start seeing blood flowing. You know, and I see as soon as that blood starts flowing, as soon as that baby's conceived, we see a face. And in my world, my niece links faces with spaces. She helps families find, families who have a space in their heart for a newborn child, she helps find that face for that family with that space in their heart. So I guess my time is up. I see the moderator here's locking and loaded on me, so I'll turn the mic over to you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Daniel. I'll open it up. Are there any questions? Again, the question was, the elephant in the room is the state budget. What would you do specifically to get the speaker and the governor to begin talking?
Yeah, and we get asked that question a lot while we're out on the campaign, and I'm sure you've gotten other answers, but this is going to be my response to that question is, I need, going down as your Republican state representative, we need to break the supermajority in the House of 20, and we need to have a larger team who can go down there. Keep in mind, you know, the governor won 101 counties. The Madigan regime, Madigan won his congressional district. You know, how can I go down there and do this budget impasse? It takes a bigger, you may consider the elephant in the room, but it's going to take something bigger than that elephant to bring these two guys together. I mean, it's two adults. I know Governor Rauner's reached his hand out and invited Speaker Madigan to different events, and he's a no-show. You know, I would think the governor would have power to say, hey, show up, or I'm going to stop your pay. I don't know. You know, I'm not there, so I don't have the experience of how we could bring these folks together. I did have the opportunity to bring two armies together, the Iraqi Army and the Kurdish Army, when I was in Iraq. But these are bigger egos than those two armies, evidently, because they don't want to come together to talk.
Any more questions? The question is, many of us in the room are farmers. What are your plans to be an advocate for agriculture?
Thank you. Great question again. I'm a farmer, too, and one of the committees I'd like to try and get on with my agriculture background is the Ag Committee. And I know Farm Bureau has a strong voice and would certainly like to visit with the Farm Bureau. I look at the annual reports and the annual intents of what you want to do, and that's what I'm for. I mean, I support Ag. The regulations, we've got to quit. And so I would be a strong voice, an advocate for farming, just as I would be an advocate for veterans, just as I would be an advocate for our firefighters and to, our special first responders. So I don't think, but the legislation on our filter strips, I believe that's about to be extended. I saw that has been once again brought up for another, extended out for several years until 2020, I believe, or 2018. So, I mean, that's a movement that we see favorable for us. But, gosh, there's so many things that, You know, there's so many people out there that don't want us to have livestock. We raise cattle, we raise hogs, you know, and we do a fine job about it. But we pasture in pastures that have open creeks, you know, and that's something we can't control here in Illinois. But I certainly, like I said, would certainly work with our federal legislators to try and get some of these changes and get some wisdom and get some common sense back into some of these laws that we pass. My leadership is a common sense leadership. If it doesn't sound right, then why are we doing it? So, thank you. That's a good question.
More questions? I have a quick question. We obviously know about the budget and the pension issues. If you get the opportunity to get to Springfield, what's an issue you would take from the 74th? I can go down to Springfield. This is an issue we have in the 74th district. This is something I'm going to start working on right away and try to get something to happen.
Well, as you mentioned, the pension, I've kind of got one that on a school board and talking with some of our local governments, and that is a prevailing wage issue. You know, it's costing our school districts, costing our local governments a considerable extra amount of money. And I was on the Atwood Board of Education, a super, super good family business there in Woodhull, or an alpha that would come work in our schools and would have to charge prevailing wage. And he's a taxpayer, too. You know, and he felt that I don't want to have to do this. I don't want to have to charge prevailing wage just to come do this project at your school, but by law I have to. So, you know, that's one that I would tackle down there. I think it's one of Governor Rauner's, part of his turnaround agenda is a prevailing wage. But yes, we need to tackle this the pension issues. We need to also tackle the school funding formula, putting more of our income tax dollars into that and less and live up to the commitment. The state has a commitment to you, members of our school district, to pay their portion of that education. And, you know, we all heard about the lottery. 50% of that's going to go to the education, right? Well, didn't quite make it there, did it? So we have to be leery of some of these promises that are made to us. So,
any further questions? Not. Thank you, Mr. Daniel Swanson, for his time today. That concludes our four candidates for our forum today. We'll definitely invite the candidates back in, have an opportunity to speak one-on-one if you have any specific questions you'd like to address to them. Again, thank you to the Knox County Farm Bureau for sponsoring this. Thank you for coming. We have plenty of donuts, coffee, water left. We don't want to have to hold those donuts over until board meeting to clean those up. So, one other housekeeping note, I believe March 3rd, 6:30 p.m. here at the Agri Center, there's going to be a 4-H picture night. I know talking with the Hennepin family, there's been lots of pictures submitted for that. So if you'd like to attend that and kind of reminisce about some of the old 4-H photos, bring some of those with you. 6:30 p.m. March 3rd here at the Agri Center. Once again, thank you for attending.